I don't want to wait for the audience to come in. I'd like to start the cast. Who could it be?
No, Z, you like have to wait.
I don't want to wait for the audience to come in, but they are here, so let's start talking, G.
All right, here it is, guys. I'm really excited. We're doing another episode of Tribe Teach. If you saw our episode on alcohol withdrawal, you will know what you are in for, and that is Hit Me, Logan.
Boom.
Science! It's gonna be dope. Because today we're talking about dope. The chronic. The ganja. Reefer. The dankest of the dank. The stickiest of the icky. The good stuff.
Kush. Just straight kush, y'all. What's up?
There's no music playing, Z. Why are
you dancing? Well, I heard it in my head because I was like rolling down the street, smoking endo, sipping on gin and juice, laid back with my mind on the paper and the paper on my mind. Okay, so check it out. Many, many, many people have asked me, Z-Dog, what do you think about medical marijuana? What do you think about cannabis legalization? Are there problems with it? Does it cure cancer? Is it the bomb diggity? And to all of that, I say yes, except for the cancer part. There's no evidence it cures jack crap.
Well, this is the problem with weed, because everybody has their own thing to tell you about weed. It's like, dude, weed is great for headaches. And then you smoke it and it gives you a headache. And they're like, dude, weed is great for relaxation. And then you smoke it and you're anxious as hell. And then they're like, dude, weed is great for the movies. And then you go to the movies and you have a pretty awesome time. That one's indisputable.
I'm not gonna lie. I may have seen Winged Migration under the influence of the very vegan cannabis herb sativa, and I will say it was the greatest movie I've ever seen until I sobered up halfway through the movie and was like, this is lame. It's a bunch of birds going anyways. So when people talk about any kind of drug, legal or illegal, and cannabis is now legal in several states, it's still a federal crime to imbibe the ganja, Schedule I drug, difficult to study. So in order to understand more about it, you have to take some degree of clinical experience, like what's going on in the field, what are doctors and nurses seeing in patients who are using cannabis, and you have to take some anecdotal stuff and then take what little science we have behind that and try to paint a picture of what's going on. And while doing that over decades, what has emerged are a few interesting things. It is pretty clear that cannabis, at lower doses in particular, the cannabinoid effect seems to have an anti-emetic property, meaning it will help with nausea in many people. And there's a lot of speculation for why this is. There are CBD1 and CBD2 receptors. There's stuff that happens centrally and peripherally with those receptors. And it's been speculated that it could be a mix of those things in addition to some anxiolytic component. Anxiolytic means destroying anxiety. So a lot of nausea is what we call supratentorial, above the tentorium in the brain, meaning sort of conscious brain, so worry, anxiety, sort of those mental processes. And if you can calm that, which is why lorazepam, one of the benzodiazepines related to alcohol, we talked about it in alcohol withdrawal the other day, why that particular medicine seems to have some effect on nausea, particularly like chemotherapy nausea, etc. Mm. People who are anxious, sort of they're worried about it and they're getting nauseous, a little Ativan takes that edge off. Now, cannabis may have some component of that as well.
Now, so if I was gonna bro science this, I would be like, bruh, so we have CBD receptors in our brain? So that means so natural and we should totally be doing it.
Yes, you should say that, because anandine receptors, cannabinoid receptors, those kind of things, they are a natural part, but that's how all drugs work. So whether they're natural or not, you know, we have some gate pathways for LSD, lysergic acid diethylamide, doesn't mean that you should be dropping acid all day. So it's really a question of like, what is the safety profile of the drug? What are the side effects? What are some unusual syndromes? And one of the things that has emerged is a paradoxical syndrome that has been called a variety of things, but let's see what the popular press calls it. Logan, can you pull up the picture of the smoking? There he is. This was in the Atlantic, I saw it today. Will smoking pot make me vomit forever, ever, 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 ever? Tad says, clickbait! It's Clickbait!
I like that Tad now sounds like Gilbert Gottfried.
Tad, you know, in my mind, Tad is Gilbert Gottfried. Just with very, very tight buttocks. Look at this. Look at his butt.
The Affleck duck.
My gosh, they're rock hard. Anyway, this is obviously a clickbaity, let's throw it up again while I talk about it, if you don't mind, Logan. This is a very clickbaity way to get people to read your article. Will smoking pot make me vomit forever? Cyclic vomiting syndrome is on the rise among adults, and marijuana use may be partially to blame. And in this article, Katie Heaney talks about her own refusal to do drugs until late in life because of DARE, the Drug Abuse Resistance Education, which data seems to show. It's taught, it was founded in 1983, and for a time it was taught in up to 75% of American middle and high schools, and it doesn't work.
No, dude, DARE totally worked from 5th grade to 10th grade.
Exactly.
So for 5 years it worked.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So students who've undergone the program are just as likely to use drugs as those who haven't, and may be even more likely to drink and smoke cigarettes. So DARE to stay on drugs.
Thanks, Nancy.
but in the process of talking about DARE, she says, well, she started doing smoking weed later in life, tried it out and found that it didn't cause problems for her. But then she started getting scared because she heard about something called cyclic vomiting syndrome. So again, what we're going to address today is this particular described syndrome that may or may not be related to marijuana ingestion, in particular chronic long-standing cannabis use. And let's kind of unravel it. Let's look at one of the papers and let's see if it's something that we want to pay a little more attention to in our patients who have cyclic vomiting, which I'll talk about, and in people who think that, you know, a chronic long-term marijuana use is without complication. So let's see if that's really true or if there's something we can learn from this. Because it has been documented that, again, short-term marijuana use has anti-emetic properties, anxiolytic properties, those kind of things. So could it have some medicinal purpose in that way? Sure. Does it have a recreational purpose? Yes. Does it have downside? Absolutely. You're impaired if you drive. Doing too much of it can lead to a kind of a motivational syndrome, which I know you've not experienced yourself, but you have friends who maybe experienced that.
How short-term is short-term? That's like once on the weekends, every once in a while? Or is that like you smoke for a period of weeks, then you go off for a period of weeks, or what is it?
Well, you know, this is up in the air, you know, and different authorities will define it differently. But one thing you have to remember, guys, is that the active agents in cannabis they can bind to cerebral fat, which means that they have a half-life in the human body that's quite long, which is why drug testing can catch cannabis ingestion, you know, a month out for some people, especially heavy users. And so what is the cumulative effect of smoking every day on the storage capacity of these metabolites? So getting into this, the way that the popular press sort of framed this in this article is talking about, well, could it be that this cyclic vomiting syndrome that we're seeing now in adults, it used to be only in kids, is now a result of increasing use of cannabis, particularly in the legalized setting. And what I want to do is I want to go, because they cite a couple of like reviews of reviews, papers that aren't the primary papers. I went back to the original primary paper. First there was a series, and we have to understand, first of all, how is this science done? What's the sort of theory behind why cannabis might do this, and does it actually happen? I mean, what do you think, Tad? I think it's totally the weed, man! What do you think is in this little red box? I play with dolls, what? What? So going back, one of the first sort of papers to kind of look at this was something where it was in Australia, because apparently in South Australia at the time there was a considerable liberalization around marijuana, and so a lot of people were smoking weed. And what they started noticing, doctors started noticing this pattern where, you know, young people would come in with this cyclic vomiting pattern where all of a sudden, and it has a certain series of characteristics, all of a sudden, out of the blue, they would start vomiting. And it was often associated with some abdominal pain, usually epigastric, right here, but it could have been anywhere. And it would be associated with sweating and just a general, you know, mild anxiety. Often it was associated with weight loss because people wouldn't eat when it was happening, and it would last for some period of time, usually days, and then it would stop. And then it would start again. And that's why it got confused at the time with something that was documented previously in kids mostly, which is CVS, cyclic vomiting syndrome. And in children, this is a well-described phenomenon, still difficult to understand why, because in children, they'll just suddenly start to vomit, then they'll be clear for a few weeks, then they'll start to vomit again, they'll be clear for a few weeks. You'll do a big workup and you won't find any cause for it. And in the setting of that, it's often associated in children with migraines. So they'll have migraines around that, they'll have migraines later in life, and often it clears up as they reach adolescence. So it can be very distressing, very debilitating for children. But when they started seeing it in adults, they said, wait a minute, what's going on? Like, we weren't really seeing a lot of this before. And that's when people, scientists, which is what science does, they take a series of anecdotes, some experience that they have, and they go, you know what, let's try to describe this better. Let's do a case series. So let's take a series of people who've had this thing happen and let's study and see what characteristics they have in common, see if we can find a pattern. And that first happened with cyclic vomiting syndrome and cannabis. In, let's see, when was it? It was 2004 in the very beautifully named journal, Gut.
Hey, I got something to say. Stephanie says if this becomes a regular educational series, we should call them TAD Talks.
We should.
Oh, TAD Talk.
TAD
what talk. Do you think, Tad? I think that's super stupid, dude. Tad has spoken.
Also, I'd just like to say, weed can help with weight loss? Bruh, is there anything weed can't do?
Bruh.
It cures everything, bro. Cures everything, including caring about the cure for anything.
That's true.
So this first series in Australia in 2004, again, a sort of a case series. And what they did was they looked at a grand total of 19 patients. And they had a very small number. And of that, five refused to consent for this study because they were like, bro, between the puking and the weed, I just don't give a fuck about this trial.
Wait, man. So this is a 14-person study?
Literally, it got down to 10. All right? So you have a 10 per... Now remember, this isn't a randomized control trial, so you don't need 1,000 people to get statistical significance. You're just describing a series of cases. So they start small, all right? So 10 patients, and it turns out that they all smoked a ton of weed. They had this cyclical vomiting illness that looked like CVS, cyclical vomiting syndrome, but it was associated with heavy marijuana use. By heavy meaning like at least a year of nearly three times a week weed smoking, often more than that. So people were regular users. And by the way, you start to think about chicken and the egg, like are they smoking weed because they're nauseous?
Right, and or this are is they something... getting nauseous because they're smoking weed?
Exactly.
Plus the people I know that like pot, really like pot, dude. Three times a week is bullshit.
Yeah.
They smoke pot all day.
Wake and
every
bake.
Every day.
Yeah. Wake and bake,
they are
get
just
high.
Perpetually high.
Absolutely. And I think that's the norm with this syndrome,
right,
is what we see. So they looked at these guys and they said, okay, in all the cases, there was chronic cannabis abuse predating the onset of the vomiting. So it happened before the vomiting. So they kind of tried to rule out, well, is it chicken and egg? Well, no, they were smoking weed well before they got sick. Cessation of the cannabis abuse led to cessation of the cyclical vomiting illness in 7 cases. So here's a theory. The weed's getting you effed up and you're getting this vomiting. Stop smoking. See if you get better. In 7 of the 10 cases, that's exactly what happened. Let me read this carefully. So 3 cases, including the published case, did not abstain. So they were like, you're not taking my weed, bro. Actually, they were Australian, so they're like, that's not weed. This is weed. and they continued to smoke, and they continued to have recurrent episodes of vomiting. But everyone who stopped actually stopped vomiting. Now, it turns out the 3 cases... 3 cases that had stopped challenged themselves again with weed. So they were like, I'm gonna try to smoke weed and see what happens. And they had gotten better. And guess what? They got worse. They started throwing up again. So people started to conclude, well, there's something going on here and it may have to do with the chronic. It doesn't take Scooby-Doo to make the association. Again, this is an association. It's a tiny trial in Australians that don't count because they're not real human beings. conclude, how can we dance when our earth is turning? How do we sleep when our tad is burning? Okay, so that was the first case series. And this is what happens. People look at a case series and they get interested and they go, can we replicate this with more cases? Can we see if there's more we can learn? And this is what the Mayo Clinic did. So, and I've put links to these articles, I believe. I may have given you one of the two articles as well as the Atlantic article. So, the Mayo Clinic in 2012, I believe, did a trial, 98 patients, and they said, okay, let's see if we can replicate this finding because they were noticing the same anecdotal stuff in Minnesota where people are high like all day. You know what I'm saying?
In Minnesota?
Oh, heck yeah. Don't you know?
Oh, hey there. Z-Dog, you don't go talking there bad about the Minnesotans there, okay, guy?
Jesse the Body Ventura, man. High AF the whole time he was governor.
Okay, well, that one I believe.
Yeah, I believe it too. So they went through and they said, okay, what is the dealio? And actually, this is what they found. So they started looking, and they said cannabis is well known for its anti-nausea effects. And they talk about the nine patient trials, et cetera. And so they first start the paper by reviewing previous data and also some of the theories. Now, since the first trial in Australia, 13 case reports and three small case series showed that there was more of this. Why is Siri trying to talk shit right now? Siri, you shut your hole. It says, I'm doing my best, Zubin. You're not, okay? You're upsetting me and the Z-Pack. I'm not even high and I'm paranoid.
All right, back on track.
Back on track. So, so in 2009, they started describing these clinical features. Long-term cannabis use, cyclic vomiting, colicky abdominal pain. And now here's where it gets interesting because this was reported in the Aussie trial and I think everyone just assumed it was those crazy Aussies being crazy. But it turns out, Tom Heineber, that every one of these cannabis hyperemesis patients would sit in a scalding hot tub of bath water. And they found that it made him feel better. And so it's true that how can we puke when our bath is burning? Isn't that weird? So this is the thing. They would learn. This wasn't an OCD thing. It wasn't a psychiatric thing. They would learn through behavioral experiment. These patients would sit in a scalding hot bath, the hotter the better, to the point where they would burn themselves sometimes and find relief of their symptoms. So this was part of the constellation, which is so freaking weird, right?
Wait, is this during withdrawals from marijuana?
No, they're high AF the whole time. In fact, many of them said that they smoked more weed when they had the emesis because they'd heard that obviously the weed helps with nausea. So,
because I've heard from heroin addicts anecdotally that a hot bath helps them feel better.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so you're wondering, is it a withdrawal thing?
Yeah.
Ah, it's interesting.
That's awesome.
Maybe there's some crossover in the mechanism of what's going on.
Okay.
So let's talk about that. We'll get to that definitely by the end. So these hot baths, the abdominal pain, the vomiting, and the smoking hella chronic, right? So Dr. Dre syndrome with a little edge of Snoop Dogg and hella hot baths. All right. So this is what they did. They took patients with long-term marijuana use before the symptoms started. They looked at a history of recurrent vomiting, so now they're starting to have this recurrent vomiting, and the absence of any major illness that might explain the symptoms. So it isn't, you know, some metabolic derangement, it isn't pancreatitis, it isn't liver disease, it isn't, you know, gastritis, it isn't gastric emptying problems, all these other things that can cause cyclic vomiting, they rule those out, okay? And the way that they did this is they looked at Epic, their electronic health record, which is what I assume Mayo uses. I think they use Epic. Anyone from Mayo that knows differently, let me know. So this was done at Mayo. And they did a chart review and they said, okay, let's search for these search terms, you know, marijuana use, cyclic vomiting, blah, 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 blah. And then they went and did the biopsy of the chart. They first found 55 patients that met inclusion criteria, which were the things I just mentioned. An inclusion criteria in a trial, as you guys remember from the last trial we talked about, means these are the things that you need to meet, these criteria you need to meet in order to be included in the trial. And then there are exclusion criteria. In other words, if any of these things are true, you can't be in the trial. So in this case, the inclusion criteria were met for 55 patients, and then they went through and did a broader search because they were like, this isn't enough. We need a bigger case series. And they broadened the search parameters in Epic. And then they found a few more patients. So they found, let me see here, they got to a total of 98 patients. So that's how they did it. Then they went through and biopsied the chart, and they got data about these patients and followed them as long as the chart actually had data for. And this was variable. So some had a little data, some had a lot of data. Since Mayo's a tertiary referral center, sometimes there wasn't a lot of follow-up. You'd see a patient for a problem, and then they'd go back to their primary somewhere else. So it wasn't the best data set, and that's one of the limitations of the trial. So 66 patients, 67% of them were men. All right. So maybe that's just part of the demographic that smokes more weed, or there's a predisposition in men to have cyclic vomiting syndrome.
Nah, my bros get high, dude. My bros get high.
So it's a men thing. Maybe. We'll call it menses. And 37% consumed cannabis products for more than 2 years before the symptoms occurred. So they'd been using it for quite some time. 84 patients, or 86% of them, had abdominal pain associated with the nausea vomiting. So these are just characteristics of these guys. Turns out about half of them smoked. Not many used alcohol. So only 10 out of the 98 used alcohol because they were too busy getting high to drink. And this is what they found. It turns out, oh, and this is interesting, one more characteristic of these guys. 57% of these weed smokers who had cyclic vomiting syndrome had documentation of the effects of hot water bathing on their symptoms. This was actually in the chart. So they would say, I take a really hot bath and I feel better. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So again, this correlation, and again, correlation doesn't imply anything beyond it's a correlation. We should examine whether there's
and they had all sort of just stumbled onto this on their own.
Yeah, so it turns out maybe they heard from a friend, or maybe they just discovered that when they take a hot shower, the nausea got better. And the hotter they made it, the better it felt. Mm. So it's people just doing what they do, which is adapting to chronic illness. And so you know what Vader always says? You don't know your body. Vader knows your body. But these guys knew their body. And they knew that if they cranked up the heat, it would feel better. So in the setting of that, they did some diagnostic studies in most of the patients. And remember, this wasn't a prospective study. This was a retrospective case series. What that means is they looked back at patients that had already been seen for other stuff and then looked at the data they'd already collected in a different way. They're not going forward and saying, okay, let's do this and this and this and this. That's a prospective trial. So in this retrospective trial, it turns out that diagnostic studies were done on most of these patients and they were negative for alternative diagnoses. So blood cell counts, glucose, liver biochemistry, pancreatic enzyme levels, CT of the belly, upper endoscopy, so going in with a scope and looking around, and colonoscopy. So they really did a pretty exhaustive thing. And a lot of them, 61% of them, okay, had gastric scintigraphy, which is a way of measuring how fast the stomach empties. So imagine this.
Stomach empties into the colon?
Stomach empties into the small intestine.
Okay.
And then through the duodenum into the small intestine, and then you get absorption there, and then into the colon where a lot of water and electrolytes are reabsorbed, and then you poop it out.
Gotcha.
So that's the path. So the way it works is this. The gastric scintigraphy measures how quickly does something that they measure get through that stomach out into the intestines and through out to the back. And what they found is most of these cats had normal gastric emptying and or overly fast gastric emptying. Often what we see in nausea and vomiting syndromes
is slow
yeah. Because it's backing up, it's sitting there, you're not moving. So people with gastroparesis, which is a fancy way of saying a paralyzed stomach, almost paralyzed stomach, they'll vomit because it's not going down. It
right.
just has only to come up. So in these cases, they saw some of that, like I think, I forget what the exact number was, 30% had delayed emptying, 15% had rapid emptying, but the majority, 46%, had normal emptying. So you couldn't nail it on slowed gastric emptying,
right.
Which was one of the theories going in. Cannabis maybe slows gastric emptying, and maybe that's the reason why people are vomiting. Maybe that's also the reason why it helps vomiting in some people. So,
yeah.
But it turns out this wasn't the case.
You know, this is really interesting because in high school one time, we were getting high in a car, and my friend took one hit of the blunt and was like, oh, pull over, I need to throw up. We're all like, loser.
Loser.
We just left him there. But
what about the munchies?
It makes me think, like, he probably had some version of CVS.
Well, yeah, and there are a lot of people who get vomiting after ingesting high doses of THC, cannabis. And the munchies is a separate thing. It may be a central effect on appetite stimulation, but we may talk about that in a different show. So then what they did was, this is interesting. So then they said, okay, let's see what the follow-up was. What happened to these patients? Here's the big weakness of this trial. Follow-up was available in only 10 patients. So 10% of the 98. Meaning,
those are the only people that came back?
They're the only people that came back or had documented follow-up. So
maybe they just couldn't find their keys, dude.
Hey, man, wasn't I supposed to be somewhere today?
I think I had to go to the doctor, man.
Yo, Tad, bro.
You're going to measure my intestines, bro.
Bro, you have my calendar, bro. Was I supposed to be at the Mayo Clinic today, man? Oh, Mayo, that sounds damn good, dude. Get me a sandwich, bitch. I want a sandwich, Dad. So only 10 followed up for whatever reason. And three of those did not abstain from cannabis use. They're like, hell no, bro. And they continue to have symptoms. Six of them, so 60% of the 10, stopped using cannabis and noted complete resolution of their symptoms. There you go, very much in line with the Australian data. And the time to improvement varied from 1 to 3 months. So it took at least a month to feel better and up to 3 months. Now, Tom, when I said that THC and the metabolites of cannabis use can be stored in cerebral fat and other fat, is it surprising to you that it might take a month before you see improvement in a heavy cannabis smoker who's smoking every day?
Not at all, because I used to smoke cigarettes and it took a good 3 months for my brain chemistry to reset after nicotine withdrawal.
Now I think nicotine is water soluble. I may be wrong, correct me if I'm wrong. So what might have happened with you is your brain receptors, your nicotine receptors might have been differently regulated from chronic nicotine use, and it took that long for those receptors to remodulate because they're little proteins in cell membranes and it takes time for them to change.
Yeah.
So it might have been
that. But I mean, just on the issue of dependency.
Right, right.
I believe it.
Sure. Yeah. So the question is there still cannabis goo floating around in the fat and it takes about a month to wash out? And maybe that explains why it takes that long. So again, we're speculating a bit, but based on some first principles of cannabis pharmacokinetics. All right, so after not using cannabis for only 1 month, one patient experienced no symptomatic improvement. So one of them who quit only did it for a month and he didn't get better, and then he started smoking weed again. Because he's like, I'm gonna get high, son. And you gotta think, okay, the people who are daily cannabis users, it's a big deal to stop. They're dependent on it, at least psychologically.
Yeah.
And so
It's gotta be at least some physical, right?
Yeah, again, people will deny physical.
Listen, dude, hey, weed's not addictive.
It's the devil's grass.
I just smoke it all day, every day because I like it.
Exactly.
But I'm not addicted to it.
Exactly. Okay?
Well, try quitting, dude.
Yeah, try quitting. Good luck. Yeah.
You will have withdrawal symptoms from quitting marijuana, right?
You can. You can, absolutely. And a lot of it has to do with anxiety. There are a lot of mental withdrawal symptoms.
Sleeping, irritability.
Yep. And cannabis has autonomic effects in real time, so tachycardia, without a concomitant increase in cardiac output. What that means is, your heart goes faster, but you don't increase your cardiac output. So it's kind of an ineffective fast heart rate, which is why exercising when you're very high is probably not a very effective strategy for improving performance.
And tell that to everybody in the NBA, because they're high AF.
And then I got high.
The NBA doesn't really test for weed because everyone would fail.
Exactly. So because 32% of the patients reported cannabis use for less than a year, they think that years of cannabis use are not essential for the diagnosis of this, but rather, you can have it even after shorter durations, but in general. So this is what they came up with from looking at this this piece. Logan, there's a graph that I get, or
Boom.
A chart. There it is.
Hey, real quick, from Kim Jordan. She wants to know, would serotonin syndrome be the same concept of withdrawal? I've heard about this a lot.
So serotonin syndrome is less a component of withdrawal than it is an excess of serotonin, often caused by a reaction to SSRI medications like Prozac, Zoloft, Celexa, et cetera, or from other medications that increase serotonin. And there's classes, MAOI inhibitors are a type of old antidepressant that can interact with certain foods and medications and cause high levels of serotonin. If you've ever seen serotonin syndrome, it's terrifying. Because high levels of serotonin cause blood pressure abnormalities through the roof, you can risk stroke, your temperature goes up, you need to be in the ICU, you're often delirious. So a little of serotonin is a good thing, a lot is a bad thing.
No, I've definitely experienced it. It's called doing ecstasy, you people.
Yes, so actually ecstasy can be associated with a serotonin syndrome, and what you see in people who show up in the ER is often a hyponatremia because they have derangements of electrolytes, and then they can progress to a serotonin syndrome. This happened to a friend of mine in residency. She was admitted to the ICU with serotonin syndrome after trying ecstasy for the first time.
Damn.
There you go, MDMA, baby.
It's gateway drug, dude.
Tad's butt.
Tad's butt. If that doesn't give you an ecstasy-like feeling, nothing will, ladies.
There's the graph.
And men. All right, so here's the graph. So this is what they propose, looking at their case study, which is small. To have this diagnosis of cannabinoid hyperemesis, right, which is what they were calling it. The Atlantic article just calls it cannabis-related cyclic vomiting syndrome. Doesn't matter what you call it. This is what it is. You need to have long-term cannabis use, and long-term could be less than a year, according to them. The major features would be you have this severe cyclic nausea and vomiting. So you're vomiting for some period of time, days, hours, weeks, and then you're better, and then you're vomiting again. It gets better when you stop the chronic. So resolution with cannabis cessation. The relief of symptoms with hot showers or baths. So this is actually a real phenomenon. If you take a hot bath and it gets better. Now, a lot of nausea gets better with a nice warm bath, right?
I've never known that before. This is my first time learning about that.
Yeah, so but with the weed thing, they're saying this is, the term is pathognomonic. So what that means is it means when you see that with this, that screams this.
Yeah.
That's like the hallmark of this shit. Pathognomonic.
So that's basically like a fancy way to say like it's correlation.
It's a strong
correlation.
And in fact, it's a little stronger than that. It's like, now, when you see blood squirting out of a carotid artery,
yeah,
that's pathognomonic of someone who's about to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like that.
Okay, I get it.
So yeah. So so back to the chart, if you don't mind. Abdominal pain is a common symptom, major feature of that. And weekly use of marijuana was another major feature. Now, things that support it might be you're younger, like most stoners. You have weight loss because a lot of them would lose weight. You have the symptoms are worse in the morning, which is interesting. And you have normal bowel habits because when they looked at the series, these guys didn't have a lot of diarrhea and other problems, constipation. They had normal bowel habits and the rest of their workup was negative. So that's what they kind of propose. And I think since then, there's been a lot of intellectual masturbation over why cannabis might cause this in some people and not others. So is it the way that the cannabis is processed? Cannabis contains over 60 active compounds. Could it be something else other than THC?
I saw somebody ask if it was different types of cannabis. Like there's a lot of talk now that cannabis is getting legalized about indica versus sativa, the amounts of THC in the cannabis, et cetera, et cetera.
I believe it's just the dankest of weed.
Mm.
Yeah, in fact, that was correlated in the study that those who smoked the dankest chronic, the Indo, if you will, were the most correlated. No, this is the problem with the study. They don't have that data.
Right.
So they
well,
can't.
Well, that's also been part of the problem with the prohibition,
can't study
prohibition of marijuana. Is
yep.
You can't study it.
Yep.
And we don't know what's in it. It's all moonshine, basically. It's at these super high levels of THC because that's what sells the best. So.
Tad Cam. Legalize it, dun, 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 dun. Legalize it, dun, 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 dun. Study it at least. So what has been speculated? So the anti-emetic effects of marijuana, we've known about those. Now, there are receptors of cannabinoid 1, CB1 and CB2 in the brain, in the central nervous system, on the dorsal ganglia, hypothalamus, hippocampus, cerebellum. So all these major areas of the brain.
Oh, real quick.
Yeah.
Shannon says, since my daughter has this, isn't it bad to stop all at once, or should she taper off, or should she just stop it all at once?
Oh, excellent question. So what the later papers have proposed, and this is where you get into a bunch of old guys sitting around a table.
Yeah.
There's no data on any of this. But what the old guys sitting around the table say for helping this is you stop the weed, but you treat them first. And the way you treat this emesis syndrome is you stop the weed, but you also give a couple of different classes of medications. One of them is, remember that medicine, lorazepam, Ativan,
yeah,
that I was talking about early on? That's a benzodiazepine, so that is something that'll take away the anxiety component of whatever withdrawal you'll get from the cannabis and also help the nausea. Because remember, it's gonna be a month off the weed before you maybe feel better.
Yeah, but you can't take a benzo every day for a month. You get
addicted
to the benzo.
You can take it as needed.
Right.
So you feel sick, you take a little
so
bit.
So you have to wait for your symptoms to worsen pretty severely, then you take one.
Generally, that's what they'll say. Yeah. And the thing is, again, are you swapping?
Do you ever worry about rebound anxiety on benzodiazepines?
100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's why when you get at higher doses and you're regular all the time on it,
right.
When you take it away, you can withdraw the same way you withdraw from alcohol. In fact, the benzo withdrawal is the worst.
Yeah.
Because
I don't know if I've taken them intermittently throughout my life, mainly just to party. But I always found that I had more anxiety after they were over.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I got relief for like a period of time, and then I got anxious again at the end.
Yeah, and this is common with withdrawal from any kind of even short term withdrawal from benzos. Do we have a signal going through? People are saying
yeah,
it's
good.
It's good. Okay, good. So you give that benzo, and then another class of drugs are the tricyclic amines, the TCA drugs, Elavil, etc., that can help with the nausea and some of the anxiety, depression components coming off the marijuana.
Another question about weed. Jennifer Marie says, what about the chronic pain aspect? I've been starting to see studies saying that THC/CBD does not help chronic pain at all. Thoughts?
It turns out they've done some series where it didn't help. And the question is, did they study it appropriately? Is it a big enough series? And I haven't looked at that data primarily, so I don't know. Some people swear by it, and I think it's the anxiolytic component. So when you're anxious about your pain,
right. You
get high. Although, I'll be honest, I get high, I'm paranoid about everything. If I have a little ache, I'm like, I'm dying.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Elizabeth, I'm coming home. I'm like, you know, Fred Sanford at that point. So.
No, somebody told me that, you know, if you're sick, hey man, if you're sick, you should totally get high. It totally fixes that shit. So I got high, and then I was just like, it didn't fix anything, but I forgot I was sick for about an hour and a half there. So that was nice.
Good advice.
Oh, science. So the idea that these receptors are all throughout the brain, but they're also in the enteric nervous system. The enteric nervous system are the nerves in the gut. And there are like a shit ton of nerves in your gut. And it turns out that there's receptors there. So could it be that the nausea effects are caused by pituitary hormones that are changed because it does affect those? Is it disturbances in your hypothalamus and your adrenal hormones? Because then you can have this autonomic instability with your heart rate going and the sweats and the nausea and all that. Because they have been described, and it's very similar to the symptoms you get with cyclic vomiting syndrome in children. So could there be the overlap right there? It's really interesting. We don't know. These cannabinoid receptors in the preoptical area, right behind the eyes, have been involved in the hypothermic effects of cannabinoids. In other words, this feeling that they lower body temperature. An impairment of physiologic thermoregulation, meaning your ability to control your temperature, provoked by cannabis use might account for the relief of symptoms with compulsive hot bathing. So could it be that there's some dysregulation in your ability to manage temperature, and going in a hot bath somehow compensates for that in marijuana
that's
using?
Kind of interesting.
Yeah, so it's an interesting thought. Again, this is all speculation based on very small patient numbers using physiological first principles, but we just don't know.
People in the comments are saying that, you know, they're struggling to keep up with this as a medication, since people are using it as a medication, and they've kind of been stumbling on the hot shower thing on their own, just anecdotally with patients.
Mm.
It seems to be the only thing that's helping people in the hospital setting.
And I think, again, patients find ways to treat themselves that work for them.
What do you think, just, you know, broad spectrum, just what do you think of weed as a medicine? I know it's like such a loaded question.
I mean, I'll tell you what I think. I think that for some people with the right physiology, it helps certain symptoms of certain things. It doesn't cure anything, all right?
Right.
Except for boredom.
Well, it seems to me that it can cure ordinary misery.
Right.
But nothing beyond
boredom and angst.
Yeah.
So if you're selling it as a cure for cancer, if you're selling it as a cure for anything, you're probably wrong, but we can study it more. For symptoms, yes, it helps for certain people. Just like alcohol can help some people sleep, and for most people, it actually disrupts sleep. So it depends on who you are, what your physiology are, what kind of receptors you are, what kind of brain you have. There's no one size fits all. Should we study it? Absolutely. Should we legalize it? 100%. Because the fact that we have alcohol and tobacco legal and not marijuana, all that does is create a thriving, you know, underground without us being able to study the drug, et cetera. So that's my 2 cents on marijuana. So the point of all this really is to say, okay, here's a drug that a lot of people are touting as a cure-all for stuff. Here's a potential bad effect of this. If we see this effect in our patients, we should be aware of its possibility. And the idea that we might ask them to stop, at least as a trial for a couple months, see if they feel better, but don't just set them adrift. Give them medication and support to help them get off. And then understand that the popular press will spin this a million different ways. And when you look at the primary data like we do, you realize it's a small case series. There's a lot of correlation, but that doesn't, shut up, Siri, that doesn't mean that there's necessarily causation. So again, smoke it if you got it, Tad. Let's read some comments. What do you think?
Let's do it. Let's see.
Deb's watching from the ER.
Nice.
She said she asked her nurse for a turkey sandwich and slippers and that D drug.
Perfect. So Deb, why are you in the ER? We hope you're feeling better soon. You need a bigger sample size. You need strain information, product info. That would help. Cynthia Ayers. I agree. Let's see. I had a patient who took promethazine, Phenergan. Or is it Compazine? I forget now. I think promethazine is Phenergan. I always get them confused. Stupid generics. To treat nausea that is weed caused, I bet he was feeling real great after that combo. Yeah, I mean, when you're chasing one drug with another drug, you know, this is like your classic chemo thing.
Dude, you know what we used to do in high school? We would dip the blunt in promethazine and then let it dry, then roll the weed, then smoke it. Woo. And you got so high doing that. It was crazy.
You are the fucking biggest derelict I've ever met in my life. You know, I did some shit, Tom Heineberg, but it's like the tip of the iceberg compared to... And that's why I love having Tom, because he's like, well, you know that time that I smoked crack with that one hobo in Brooklyn?
Listen, I'll bring you guys what they're talking about on the streets, what the kids are doing. Ooh, what about fake weed? You know about the spicy? Ooh.
Yeah, dude, not good. Yeah. Don't do it. Smoke
right,
the real thing.
It's a cannabinoid also.
It is.
Right? But it's cut with other stuff.
Actually, I don't know. I don't
and
know
the truth is you don't really know what it is because they keep changing the chemical compositions,
yep.
Don't they?
I don't trust it.
Yeah.
Man, you get just, dude, it's legal in so many places. Just freaking smoke the real thing if you're going to get baked. Hot Bass, let's see. I like Epic, but more, okay, I'm not going to, no Epic bashing. So other people want to talk about serotonin syndrome and extrapyramidal symptoms. We'll do that in a different show. Love me some dumping syndrome, Adam West. So dumping syndrome is where food hits the duodenum and for some reason it triggers this massive autonomic rush of feeling terrible and then you get the squirts.
I get that after I eat Mexican, see?
Oh, hell yeah.
Chipotle, son.
Never eat an actual live Mexican.
It's Joyce says, Tom, how are you alive? Your stories are too much. Listen, girl. Been around, okay. Lived a lot of life.
Tom is indestructible. He's one of those like adolescents, and he's not an adolescent, who feels that he's absolutely invulnerable to everything.
Okay, so here's the question is CBD oil, CBD, all these CBD products are hitting the market. Is this gonna have any of the same sort of effect? I would think not.
We're gonna know when we know. So when we see enough people doing it for long enough,
yeah,
and then having cyclic vomiting syndrome, then we'll know.
I would doubt that it would. I mean, just because it's not psychoactive, so.
We just
there
don't
has
know.
To be some part of the psychoactive component that's causing the nausea.
Whoa, we don't know. It could be one of the any of the multiple components in cannabis. That's the problem without, you know, fractionating them out and testing them in rats or something.
But when you smoke too much, you do get the spins, you get dizzy, you get nauseous.
No, it's true. Well, here's an interesting thing. So in Canada, they did a trial on this particular variety of shrew. It's called a musk shrew. Which they apparently the Canadians have that kind of shit. They're like, hey, is that a musk shrew, eh?
They're like, oh, what are you guys using down there? Mice? Hey. Yeah, that's for cute. Oh, we're using the musk shrew.
Yeah.
It's a lot beefier.
It's
more robust.
Plus they have little human faces, so we kind of think they're pretty close to humans, eh? So this musk shrew, they would give it a shit ton of cannabis and it would puke if you did it regularly. So they were able to at least reproduce some component of this in the musk shrew model, which I did not know existed until today.
Jason says, so if we have our daughter stop smoking, she's going to need something like Zofran and an anti-anxiety medication?
She might need that. She might not. It might be very short term. And again, I was going to say I'm not a doctor. Oh shit, I gave it away. I'm not her doctor and this is not medical advice. This is infotainment. She should see her doctor and talk about how to transition off marijuana and see if it helps.
Right.
That's the correct answer.
Just anecdotally, though, like whatever you're going to prescribe, it's not take Zofran for a month and take benzos for a month.
No.
Then, you know, now you're going to get benzos.
You overlap it. Right. So you want to start that and then, at least according to the articles that
maybe
I read.
Maybe a few days
to
help with the transitional period. And then you're
and you
all
might,
back
you might
off.
Not need it very long. And in fact, the hope is that you don't because you don't want to
Oh, but weed's not addictive, Z. It's not even addictive, man.
Just stop it.
It's just psychologically addictive, dude.
Dad.
You know what's addictive?
That ass.
That ass.
Listen, bro, people that get addicted to weed, they're just psychologically weak. No, it's addictive. Jesus Christ. See, look around at all the people that are addicted to it.
You seen the kids snorting chocolate?
Yeah, that's not a good idea. You know, Charlie, Willy Wonka did that, and look at him.
Exactly.
Dude's effed up. He had a glass elevator and shit. So, my fiance says Jennifer Marie has PTSD pretty bad, and it helped a lot of his symptoms for a while now. Finally sleeps through the night, hasn't had the hypervigilance nearly as bad as he usually does. So for some people report improvement in PTSD. Again, you'd need a randomized controlled trial. But, you know, there are other experimental drugs for PTSD, like ketamine, other types of therapy, including MDMA, ecstasy, in medically supervised.
That's in conjunction, though, with talk therapy, cognitive therapy.
Yeah, yeah.
So that doesn't mean just go to a rave and take ecstasy.
No.
PTSD.
In fact, please don't do that.
Right. People are also using ketamine.
Ketamine. Sort of thing. Ketamine, MDMA, these are all preliminary, and it comes with the talk therapy that goes with it. So you're sitting there with blindfold on, they're talking you through this thing, and in many ways, you know, people report they relive, they go back to the scene of the original trauma, and they reframe it, and they find a sense of meaning in it, and they find some love to be found in the horrible event. And that ecstasy, anyone who's done an ecstasy, it depends. Everyone has different experiences with it, right? But
what's the one that's rapid eye movement? That one? You know, EMDR?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with that.
I've heard that it can do the same thing, like take you back through the beginning.
Oh, interesting.
Of
yeah. Yeah.
And that's a non-psychoactive version of it.
Right.
I'm pretty sure it's called EMDR.
We'll get some experts on PTSD on the show because there's been enough interest in it and it's enough of a problem, enough cause for suffering, not just in the patient, but in their family, extended.
Oh, dude, I have a buddy who's a scout sniper and he told me weed is the only thing that stopped him from killing himself.
Yeah.
So if it's helping, great. Like, keep using it.
Yep. You know. Plus, then you can listen to Cypress Hill and find that they don't actually suck as bad as you thought.
That's right. You know? It'll make bad movies good and good movies great.
Hits from the bong. Hits from the bong. Pick it, pack it, fire it up. Come along and take your hits from the bong. Put your blunt down just for a second.
Hey,
don't.
Real quick. We definitely have people that have teenagers on the show. So, you know, while we're saying weed's, you know, not that bad, et cetera, et cetera, what point would you let your own children smoke weed? Or, like, you know, not come down too harsh on them?
There is considerable early data that says that smoking cannabis during adolescence leads to permanent reconfigurations of the brain that may not be positive. Now, you always have to worry that this is more reefer madness science, because they did similar studies with MDMA saying it changes spinal neurons and so on, and these were rat studies, and how much they translate, I don't know, but I personally am nervous enough about it in adolescents with growing brains that I would say don't. Just wait. You can get high as fuck when you're 25 or 30. Don't do it when your brain is growing, because it's probably gonna change stuff in a way that you can't predict. We just don't know, right? And again, no reefer madness, but dare to keep kids off drugs.
Except I did it, and now I'm a Bitcoin millionaire. So suck it, guidance counselor.
I don't know if Bitcoin thousandaire counts as millionaire, but I think if you round up, sure.
Alan says EMDR has been found to be very useful with PTSD. There's another version called IEMT, which may well be even better. See the work of Andrew Austin, psychiatrist, nurse in England. So yeah, EMDR it's just about rapidly moving the eye. They put you in this sort of like cone thing, I think, and then there's dots you're supposed to follow.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you're following the dots with your eye, you receive talk therapy, and it helps you sort of reset trauma.
The vigilance stuff. Well, Monica Winter says EMDR didn't work for her, seems to work for some personality types, not for others. So there's no one size fits all. So Allison McClay says she did EMDR for ADHD, and it's good for real trauma, but it doesn't work for ADHD. And then Christine McGroy says, time to call the code on this. Good night, Zubin, Tom, and Logan. Hashtag Logan had no hashtag tonight.
Reefer madness, y'all.
Reefer madness.
You know what? The hashtag's inside yourself.
It's inside of you.
Look deep inside, and you'll find your own hashtag. And that hashtag may be hashtag smoke it all day, every day. But I don't recommend it. Guys, thank you for joining us again for a Tribe Teach. Hopefully this was useful to you. If it was, hit share, spread the word. We're doing Tribe Teach every now and again. And if you love us, like I know you love us, hit us up on Patreon. We've gotten a lot of donations recently. They help us a lot to support the show. They pay our expenses and our bills and all the costs that we have to bring this wonderful programming to you. Why do I sound like a public radio host during a telephone?
Brought to you by...
Brought to you by...
Lemons.
Monsanto. Monsanto, killing Tad since 1985. And we out.
The hashtag used to be a pound sign. Fun fact.
Go. Hey, you so much fun.
That's the birthday.